we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Mirror, read by Brian Perkins.
Terrified Joe Ray was rescued from the roof of his blazing home late last night in the nude. He was lifted to safety and treated in hospital for exposure.
Well, thank you, Ken Smith of Newark, for sending us that. And now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Austin Mitchell. Before we start round one, here's the last cutting about the general election, I promise.
Tonight, British television mounts its largest and most expensive general election night results service. Both the BBC and ITV have spent more than £2 each on that.
And it looked every penny of it. Now, thanks to Rona Sanderman of Sutherland for spotting that one in The Scotsman and sending it to us. Richard, where was it jobs for the boys and for the girls if they wanted them?
This is a reference to Mrs. Bottomley, is it not?
She doesn't actually come into the answer, but I suppose you're headed in the right direction.
Well, I was just going to give her for the answer every answer.
Oh.
And one of them must be right. So it could be this one. I rather think it is, actually. Major decided finally to respond to all the criticism that there were no women in his cabinet. So he rushed round every single woman he could think of. And some of them signed on and others didn't. The egg woman was offered a job. And it was a great pity that she turned it down, wasn't it? Cause in the interest of humour and satire, it would liven things up.
Perhaps she was the one who threw the eggs at him during the campaign.
Good one.
It's a great mystery why she didn't want the job. Do you know, Austin, you're one of these politicians?
Up in Forest Area, she could have wanted to stand for deputy leader of the Labour Party.
Yeah.
You get your points. It was John Major's new cabinet in which Michael Heseltine was offered trade and industry and with all his usual humility immediately named himself president. The Prime Minister then called him Michael Mates, and employing the diplomatic skills he picked up during the 10 minutes he was Foreign Secretary, he sent the Irish a minister named after a brand of contraceptives. Mates, yes. Ian, why did the Orient express a preference?
Oh, thank you. Richard's just said Hong Kong, which is a subtle clue. I think this is about Hong Kong.
Good heavens. How right you are, Ian.
It's the choice of governor.
That's right.
And I think the logic is that they give the job to Chris Patten, because the man who can't get into Bath obviously should be given charge of Hong Kong. I think it's the usual policy of someone who looks like a loser, bung him off to the colonies. Well, that may be unfair. It's a very difficult job. He's got to sit there and say to the Chinese, would you like Hong Kong? And they say yes, and then he gives it to them, then he comes home. Quite tough, really.
Yes, I thought it was rather nice the way they gave David Warrington Bermuda, where he can go and hang people.
Yes, or go and disappear, preferably.
And then, of course, we're waiting for the consolation prize for Neil Kinnock. I thought Governor of Rockall, weren't
you? You did say Rockall.
Well, that's what we got in the election.
You're absolutely right. It is the people of Hong Kong who were offered the choice of David Owen or Chris Patten to take over as last ever governor of the colony, an option which was greeted with shouts of roll on 1997. Austin, your question now. Can you tell us about the Welshman, the Scotsman and the New Zealander?
I can. This is the resignation of Neil Kinnock and the sudden unwished-for contest for the leadership between John Smith and Brian Gould, who's the New Zealander, whereas the deputy leadership is turning into a crowd spectacular. In fact, before I was coming here, I was actually just completing my... You've got to get 55 nominations, and I completed my 55. Then I found there had to be Labour MPs that nominated you.
I love the idea that John Smith's going to be a good new leader. You replace Kinnock, and you put in his place the man who came up with the tax proposal. Oh, there's a winner.
Ah, oh, but it's his vibrant young personality that there are.
Ah, oh yes.
Good evening. I want to tell you the bad news first.
This refers to the Labour Party leadership election, which against all the odds is likely to be won by a Labour candidate. An early poll suggested Smith had taken the lead, which means if polls are anything to go by, Ken Livingstone is a good each-way bet for the position. Alan, as is traditional, here's some music for you. There's a thing called lava by the B-52s. And the question is, Alan, what's coming down the mountain when it comes?
Oh, how comical. I mean, I don't get any politicians.
No. Nope.
I mean, this is another slow, creeping, horrible thing, which is engulfing southern Italy.
That's right.
It's a very sad picture on the television, a shed, which said something like, F the governor on the side. A bloke left out a jug of wine and a loaf of bread and for the volcano and then ran off and it ate his house. It's a terribly sad story. It is slowly running for the leadership of the Labour Party, I think. It's Etna, that was the name.
That's right.
Stuck
that's
in the throat.
Etna. Trying to stop the advancing waves of molten rock, the Italians sent in the army, who went up the mountain, carefully weighed up the problem and surrendered.
Come on.
I've got four lines about Mussolini.
Well, at least he made the lava run on time.
The government then called in the United States Air Force, who do what they're best at, and when they finished getting the local girls pregnant, they napalmed an olive grove before bombing the lava with 30-ton concrete blocks, which simply floated away. They must have got them from a local reject shop. In Sicily, there isn't much call for concrete blocks that float. And the scores at the end of the first round are, unsurprisingly, 4-4. Richard, your question again. Where have visitors been asked to splash out less on orders from the order?
Is it to do with the speaker?
No, sir.
It's not political.
It's a holy question, sir.
A holy question?
Ah, yes.
Is it to do with His Holiness the Pope?
No. Do they know on that side of the...
He knows everything.
It's the drought. It's the drought at Walsingham.
That's right.
And there isn't enough holy water in the well. All these poor buggers who are trudging towards Walsingham to have their unemployment cured. Various other disasters that grip the country. Going down to the bottom of the well and there's nothing there. Dead cat, you know. A couple of tins and a few old mates, as it were. And there isn't any holy water. Very sad. It'll all get better now, Major's in there. A lot of holy rain. She'll be all right.
You're quite right, Alan. The Abbey authorities are concerned that if the water level keeps on going down at the same rate, there'll soon be hardly enough left to walk on. And we move swiftly on to Ian. Who was conned about the con who conned them?
Oh, this is the Conservative Party who fooled everyone into voting for them.
He's right.
But not to this question.
It's this woman called Abadur, or some name like this, who got a lot of money by raising money for charity and then pocketing herself. And she, in turn, was conned by someone like Joe Flynn, one of those men.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
It's all about another appearance in court of the confidence trickster Rosemary, that's no Lady Abadur, after a notorious con man conned the judge into thinking she'd hidden stolen money in South America. Having been taken for a ride to the tune of £2.7 million, a charity paid £250 to infamous trickster Barry Gray, alias Joe Flynn, alias J.R. Hartley, for information that was entirely false. Gray's many previous scams include convincing the Guinness directors their boardroom was bugged, selling a second-hand pair of shoes to a newspaper for $25,000, and supplying scurrilous information which cast doubts on the integrity of the late Robert Maxwell. Well, you can't be wrong all the time, can you? Austin, will you listen to this?
A little sunshine, a sea of gladness, to wash away all the tears of sadness.
question is, who showed a touch of glass in Las Vegas and decided the speech must go on?
Yes. Oh, yes, that's right, that's right.
Of course it is.
It was the late President Reagan.
Yes.
Who was giving a speech when he was suddenly thumped on the side of the head. He didn't realise and continue with the speech. And a nuclear war protester thrust him aside and gave the same speech at a different pace.
The only way to kill him, the scene was very reminiscent. Do you remember in Superman 2 when a piece of kryptonite is chucked?
That's right.
Superman. This is a piece of Reaganite that they hurled at him with the hope of finishing the old bugger off for good. But he didn't. He hit him on the side of the head and he went on talking. I think it was wonderful.
After the incident, the veteran B-minus movie actor appeared to be dazed and confused. In a word, unaffected. Alan, where might you aller to voir Blanche Neige et les Sept Nains?
Oh, yes. Yes, this is the new cabinet. This is dopey, sleazy, lousy, and all that. This is it's great news.
Bottomly.
Why Curry stayed out?
Not Curry.
It's our new European partner. It's Disney, this wonderful new country that's got accession to the common market, and it's full of all these dwarfs with rubber faces, much like Belgium. This horrible thing full of hamburgers and hot dogs, and all of France will now grow fat, just like when you go to Disney World in America. These people weigh about 3 tons walking about, and you think, we saw them in the Jungle Book, but it isn't. They're just people who've come to see all these other huge fattest people in the world go to Disneyland. It's going to be horrible, but it's outside Paris. I mean, thank God it's not outside London. But
absolutely right. The vast trickle of visitors who poured through the gates of Euro Disney to meet Snow White and her 7 vertically challenged manual operatives. Due to the language barrier, many British visitors were puzzled to discover La Belle au Bois Dormant was Sleeping Beauty, and that the Three Little Pigs pork sandwich was at £5.50, Le Grand Rip-Off. The scores at the end of that round, you little devils, are Richard and Ian 6, but Alan and Austin in the lead with 9. Round 3 commences with some crime news from the Derby Express.
Burglar Leroy Wilson was given a suspended sentence after admitting burglary and theft of a £100 television set. The court heard that Wilson told police he had accidentally broken the window by knocking while calling at the house. He then realised the owner was out and decided to remove the television for safety in case of burglars.
Oh, thanks to Mrs. J. A. Kirk for sending us that. Richard, who proves there's one connected every minute?
No, I don't know what it is. I mean, it could be to do with this new television channel that's coming up.
No, it doesn't do with
I bet it's a telecom question.
Did you see about the new television channel? It's going to muck up everyone's videos. So whoever gets the new television has got to spend millions of pounds mending all the people's videos. So nobody wants to have the new. It's a very good thing.
Scientist speaks. <It's one way. laughs>
Nobody wants to have it now.
Does this mean we can't take Morse? It's very good, isn't it? Do you see it?
He goes on and on about Morse. Every bloody week he goes on about Morse.
I do enjoy Sergeant Lewis.
Boring program on earth.
The one way we're going to get Barry locked up. He doesn't enjoy Morse. Right, take him out now.
Anyway, it's BT, isn't it?
I like telecom. Lovejoy.
Telecom. You know all about it. Ian knows all about it.
The men in white coats are coming. He likes Lovejoy.
Never mind.
We used to enjoy
you don't know the answer to this. Do you know the answer to this? Well, I'll tell you the answer to this. It's enterprising small businessman Barry Gibbons, who produced a direct mail shop which promised no more telephone bills for you ever. For just £7.50, he offered a completely legal way to save money. Those who paid up received a sheet of paper advising them to request disconnection of their telephones. The Advertising Standards Authority became suspicious when they noticed the words save money and telephone in the same paragraph. Ian, will you
just
listen?
It reminds me of the man who used to advertise in Private Eye, and it used to say, make money, no trouble at all, send £2 to this address. So people sent money, and he sent them a thing saying, put an advert in Private Eye saying, make money, £2. I thought he was a genius.
Robert Maxwell. I thought he was behind that one.
Ian, will you listen to this?
Soap gets registered. The neighboring and the spatula. Yesterday's delivery. Tickets for the bachelor. She's a moving violation from a conk down to a shoes. But it's just an invitation to the blues.
Well, that was an invitation to the blues by Tom Waits. Your question is, who won't be gracing the gala with her presence?
This is the Queen Mother, who's decided not to go to the Tom Waits concert. he's very disappointed.
Could be. Or another member of the royal family.
It's hard to keep track of the royal family these days.
Is Fergie? Does she still count?
Yes, it is Fergie. Keep going.
So Fergie's not going to her wedding anniversary this year.
Which gala is this?
It's the charity gala, which has been advertised as being in the presence of Her Royal Highness the Duchess of York. Buckingham Palace decreed that the words "in the presence of" were far too grand and insisted the organisers rewrite the invitations, a move which, if the present state of other royal marriages is anything to go by, can only bode well for the printing industry. Austin, where did the true blue atmosphere turn even bluer?
This was the Conservative Club in Staines, where the steward was reported as greeting people, "How are you, dot, 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 dot." Oh, well, never mind, I can't count the dots.
I got it.
And, he was accused...
not Inspector Morse. Hey, that's one of my favourite programmes.
I'm beginning to like you, Barry.
The steward was breathalysed by Inspector Morse and discovered to be almost as drunk as most of the members. He was therefore fired.
Absolutely right. It's a man called Peter Barrett, the bombastic barman at a Conservative club in Staines, who lost his job after addressing customers with the kind of fruity language which is usually found in comics like Viz or Hansard. However, an industrial tribunal decided there is always a certain amount of bad language in Conservative clubs, and the complete bar steward has been unfairly fired. And the complete bar steward has been unfairly told where to put his P45. Alan, your question now. Who was old enough to know better but failed his acid test?
This is not some hidden house party joke. It's not about all those four-year-old children that are getting...
No, it's right at the other end of the age scale.
Extremely old person. I don't know. He was dropping some substance and it wasn't good for him because he was 80 years old.
Yes, probably. It's near enough. I won't give you any
more. No, it sounds like one for Richard. Old bloke, self-abuse, drugs, I mean...
I'll give you a clue. 76-year-old man from Finchley.
No,
right? It's Dennis.
Dennis Thatcher.
He's been taking acid. Well, got to do something with her out of work, haven't you?
This is a 76-year-old Finchley man who was convicted of drug smuggling. He was caught with £50,000 worth of LSD in a false-bottom case, along with a quantity of filasan resin and some pure Colombian denture fix. The world's oldest international drug runner, well, drug stroller, was part of a ring which encouraged abusers to turn on, tune in, and drop off. And he's also suspected of organising all-night raves at acid-sheltered house parties. His big mistake was in trying to get on a transatlantic flight with a bus pass. Let me give you the scores at the end of round three. We have not moved in the case of Richard and Ian. We're still stuck on six. We'll have moved briskly on for Alan and Austin with 11. Before we start the final round, here's a small ad from the Slough Express.
Erotic blow-up doll, only used twice, £25. Puncture repair kit. Also used twice. £2.
Well done, Brian, and thank you, R.J. Jones, for sending us that. All contributions gratefully received. Richard, here's a piece of music for you.
Out where the bushman sings and those dingoes howl, you can see the strangest things, and I'll tell you now that the strangest thing you ever will see, you won't believe your eyes, is the black crow flying backwards to keep the dust out of his eyes.
Where do love nests cause shocking behaviour?
Yes. Well, it was Rupert Murdoch singing there, wasn't it?
And they like it. It was a man called Chad Morgan, actually.
Yeah, mm.
The question was where a love nest shocking?
Yes.
I suppose it's another royal question, isn't it?
It could be royal.
Crow flying backwards. It's about a crow.
Was it in Australia?
No, it was in the Orkneys.
No, it was in the Orkneys, wasn't it?
Corbies. They're called Corbies.
Are they called Corbies?
They're called Corbies.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Orkney for crow. And they're screwing on telephone wires.
Is this the Robert Burns poem?
It's about
poem?
The top and bottom of it, really. What?
He wrote a poem called The Twa Corbies.
Twa Corbies making a mane. You're absolutely right.
It was the
right.
Twa Corgis. It was about the royalty. Dedicated to the Queen Mother.
Imagine the corgis doing it on the telephone wire.
Yes, royal fussing.
A horrible little thing, those corgis.
Well, that'd be quick. I mean, a telephone wire, just think about it. I mean, one false step and... My goodness.
Bingo.
That's next year's eggs up the spout, isn't it? But that's what they do. They climb up telephone poles in the Orkneys and do it.
The answer lies in the Orkney Islands, where, due to a shortage of trees, the hooded crow has taken to building nests with bits of wire and tin cans up electricity poles. These cause frequent power cuts when they are short out the circuits, and instant poached eggs in crow's nest soup whenever it rains. Ian, your question now. Who had the workmen in on a very expensive job?
Now, is this the Shetlands?
Oh, no.
Some national story I've missed.
Look, let me help you a little towards this one. It's about a gang who lifted a money dispenser bodily out of a building.
Oh, with a JCB?
That's there right. You go.
Oh, thank you for telling the answer. You read this one?
Yes, I did, yes.
Some people attacked this bank.
That's right.
You know, those cash dispenser machines.
That's right.
They attacked it with a huge lorry.
Yes, you read it too, did you?
Yes, I read it. And, as I remember it in the Telegraph...
That's right.
They took the money.
That's right, yes, they did. Yes, they so often do, don't they? When they do that sort of thing. There's so much of that going on these days.
Which is terrible.
Yes. But now they've got rid of Kenneth Baker, I think everything's going to be all right.
I think I'll accept that as an answer.
You should. You gave it him.
That's right. Austin, what Sky pilot survived on the wing with a prayer?
I don't know. But
Cessna. One of the Cessna stories. Bloke takes off from New Zealand. You know New Zealand, aren't you, from New Zealand?
Yes.
Oh, bloody hell, you ought to know there's nothing else. Nothing else happened in the last 80 years.
So this is the National Airways. A man took off on the Cessna.
A man took off on a Cessna from the South Island because he wanted to go to the North Island, right. Presumably to improve himself. I know nothing about New Zealand. and on he had a stowaway. There was a bloke on the tail. And
this is fascinating.
When he landed in the other island, this bloke fell off. Probably the most interesting thing to have happened in New Zealand for the past 200 years. Well, that's about it.
Roll on, Brian Gould.
I was just thinking, Brian Gould would do anything to further his election campaign.
The pilot only knew he had a passenger when he knocked on the cockpit door.
Yeah, excuse me.
And asked if he could possibly borrow a thermos of hot tea, a tartan travel rug, and an extra large air sickness bag. The magnificent man on his flying machine, Maurice Treweek, escaped without injury, a miracle which he attributed to his born-again Christianity, though he didn't specify whether he'd found God before or after the plane attack. Alan, what may be roaming in the gloaming?
Oh, it's not another Scot. You choose these so you can practice your accent.
I am given these by a force greater than myself.
It's a Scots thing. Ah.
Indeed it is.
An animal of some kind.
Several animals.
John Smith.
Several animals
roaming
of some kind.
About.
Is it anything to do with Prince Charles?
No.
It's not to do with this buffalo.
It's buffalo.
Well, it is to do with Prince Charles. He has endorsed it.
Oh, really?
Up with a buffalo or a stoat or an elk and he'll endorse it. Never mind anything else. Anything rather peculiar and covered in long hair.
there is a scheme to build a wood, or is it glen that they call it up there? Anyway, they're going to build this thing with trees in it because it will encourage a new fauna consisting of buffalo and elk. And it has Prince Charles's full endorsement.
Oh, good. It is the ambitious plan of a Scottish company to restore 50,000 acres of land back to nature, where wild creatures will be allowed to roam unfettered. A similar scheme is in operation in Glasgow at closing time on Saturday night. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you brought a cutting for us?
This is the latest British Rail story, which I thought was quite funny, after all the leaves on the line and one thing. It says, British Rail may allow staff to use false names because of fears that angry passengers may track them to their homes.
How are they going to get there?
Very good, Ian.
And this was from the Bucks Examiner. It says, customers of Thames Water Utilities have seen the bills take a giant leap as the company tries to bring its charges into line with other firms. Cesspool users have been sent reeling by a 135% increase in the cost of getting rid of their waste. But the huge hike in payments has been met with incredulity by householders in Horridge, who feel the company is trying to squeeze all it can out of them.
Austin, what have you brought for us?
This is my own. You may think it's a lot of bull, but my thank you advert to Grimsby appeared in Grimsby's Evening Telegraph on Thursday night, and it said, Austin Mitchell, your MP, servicing Grimsby. which puts me fairly high on the Ashdown scale. not as one of the most loved politicians, but one of the most loving politicians.
Well done. Alan.
Well, by happy coincidence, Barry, I have another Scottish story.
Accent.
An accent. Well, I chose it for Barry because he likes... Down the years, I've got the feeling from you, the wonderful impressions, that you're probably not averse to the skirl of the pipes.
Oh,
which is
no,
why
I brought this story
from the Dundee Courier.
Oh, very good.
Blairgowrie man has been given a conditional discharge on a charge of attempting the theft of milk from a cow. Following his plea of guilty to a charge of being drunk and disorderly. The court had earlier heard that when police were called to a cowshed at Mott's Farm, Bankfoot, David Nochty, 37, insisted that he was not trying to milk the cow, he was trying to play Scotland the Brave.
Oh, thank you all. Now, look, let's look at the final score. Oh, my goodness. The final score, Richard and Ian are 8, but Alan and Austin are twice as good. They scored 16, and this week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a brief tale from the Daily Telegraph, sent in by R. Walton Stanwell of Filey.
Upsall Castle was last hit by fire in 1916. The staff then, like yesterday, led the battle to contain the flames and were doing well until the chief constable, Sir Robert Bower, arrived. He said we were tackling it the wrong way and suggested we should knock a hole in the roof to get at the fire, said the castle's owner, Lord Trenmire. We did. The flames shot up and the whole place burned down.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Ian Hislop and Austin Mitchell. The chairman was Barry Took. The news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Colin Swash.